Okay, we are in lesson, where are we? Lesson number what? Let me scroll under the chat here. 21. Or wait. Did I forget to update? I think we're in lesson number 22, aren't we? Yeah. I forgot to update the... All right, let me get this out, and I'll put the link in the room here in case anybody... I'll see if it puts it in. Nope. I put the whole link of the page in. So let me go... Oh, see, I can't do this. Let me go on the server. So hold on a second here. Unless somebody jumps the gun to it. Like if you have a browser that allows you to right-click and say open in this frame, go ahead and go for it. All right, let's see. Where is it at? HC. I don't even remember where I put these studies. Oh, yeah, okay. HC, LD, and then HTML. Okay, and then lesson 22. All right. Okay, let me put... Oh, thanks, Sean. He beat me to it. I think mine's clickable, though. So... All right. So then just scroll down to... Like when you get to that page, just scroll down to question number 3, I believe it is. Cancel. Okay, I got to do this in a different area here. Hold on. Okay. All right, it's fixed on the server. So now next time we meet... Well, I didn't upload it to the server, though, so... Yeah. Yeah, if you click the link, you don't even have to scroll down. It's going to be right on the main page that you're in. So anyway, question number 3. Which is, John saw a beast rise up out of what? And this is, of course, Revelation 13, verse 1. And it says, and I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy. You know, I remember years ago when we used to go, my wife and the kids, we used to go to a Sunday keeping church. It's where I first started pulpit preaching. And the pastor there told everybody, and most pastors believed this, but he was the only one I ever met that actually said it out loud. He says, you don't have to read the book of Revelation. It's for those people that are going to be left behind during the 7-year trib. And, of course, we found out later he was wrong. First of all, there is no 7-year tribulation. There's not a single Bible verse that says that. The only way that they come up with it is the Jesuits back in the 1500s. Or was it the 1700s? I don't know. I got it online. But they twisted the prophecy of the Daniel, the prophet. And Daniel spoke of a 7-year period of time that starts the moment Messiah is baptized, and you know, by John the Baptist. It's, of course, Jesus Christ. And then 7 years later, Stephen is stoned. You know, Jesus is baptized, and then Stephen is stoned 7 years later. It's called the Week of Daniel. And they twist that with a futuristic view of Antichrist, so that when the Antichrist gets here, they're saying there's going to be 7 years of, 3.5 years of peace, and then 3.5 years of turmoil and all this other stuff. But the problem with that theology is when the eastern sky splits, they're going to realize there was no 7 years, because it was a prophecy that was twisted out of chronological order. The 7 years has already been fulfilled from 27 A.D. all the way up to when Stephen was stoned in 34 A.D. But anyway, because they don't read the book of Revelation, they don't understand what beast means, sea, or 7 heads, or 10 horns, or anything like that. But as is clear here, John sees this beast rising up out of the sea. There are other symbols of identification in this passage as well, but we're going to get into that much later on during the studies. But for those of you that want to jump ahead and figure out what all the symbols are, on my website in the prophecy section, go to the prophecy study tools, and you'll see it says Revelation symbols. Symbols of Revelation or something like that, or Revelation Revealed. I can't remember. It's the top link. I'm pretty sure it's the top link. Let me just check it real quick here. Prophecy, and then Prophecy. Yeah, Symbols of Revelation, that's the first one. Every symbol in Revelation has been defined just using the Bible. Revelation was never sealed. I mean, they call it Revelation. It's Daniel's book that was sealed up until the end times began. So, but anyway, later on in the vision, the angel explains to John just what this sea means. And that's what the question here is. John saw a beast rise out of what? And it says he rose out of the sea. And in Revelation 17:15, and this is one of the neat things about prophecy, too. Sometimes you don't have to go that far to get the definition. Granted, you know, you might have to go all the way to Genesis to get it, or you might have to go to Isaiah to get it. But in Revelation, this particular symbol is defined, as well as other areas of the Bible, but the easiest way to go is Revelation 17, verse 15, and it says, "And he saith unto me," and this is the angel explaining things to John in the vision, he goes, "The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." And also notice what the that when the sea is troubled in prophecy, it speaks of the wicked people. Because Isaiah chapter 57, verse 20 says, "But the wicked are like a troubled sea, when it cannot rest, whose waters are cast up in dirt and mire," or mire and dirt, rather. So yes, the sea in prophecy is in fact talking about people. In fact, many peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And when you research the time frame of this prophecy, and understand how the papal power in Rome ruled over all of what we call today as Europe, that's actually a lot of different nations and languages, just as Revelation said, or like it says in Old English, many peoples, nations, and tongues. Because Europe is not like United States. It's like United Nations, if you will. There's all these different nations with all these different languages. And that's why the prophecy said it would be many peoples, nations, and tongues. Or multitudes and nations and tongues. Peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Okay, anyway, question number 4. Let's just jump right ahead to that one. Let me see if I can get through at least to 5 this week, because there's some pretty interesting stuff in these. Anyway, question number 4 is, the beast was composed of characteristics from what 3 other beasts? And then Revelation chapter 13, verse 2 says, "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." So as we see here, the beast had the characteristics of a leopard, a bear, and a lion. But what does all this mean in prophecy? And this is one of the neat things about prophecy, too. You can have 2 Christians standing there holding the same exact Bible, reading the same exact verses, and one of them is going to understand it and the other one ain't. Because one of them is obedient and the other one is disobedient. And that's why I did that sermon and that web page on the site that's called, "In order to understand prophecy, you must be obedient." Because, I mean, it's just an old truth from the Old Testament all the way to the New Testament. If you look in the Old Testament, you'll see whenever the Jews were disobedient to God, they could never understand what was going to happen the next day. The only thing the prophets could tell them was to repent. And the same thing happened with the Christians in the New Testament. When they decided to go along with Constantine's demand on March 6th, 321 AD, to go ahead and keep Sunday holy instead of the Sabbath that they had been keeping for 4,000 years. And yeah, this is 321 AD. Even though all the Sunday-keeping churches today say the Sabbath was changed at the day Jesus rose from the dead, if that's the case, why is it in 321 A.D., almost 280 years from when Christ, 280 or 78 years, I think it was, from when Christ ascended. So for almost 3 centuries, every Christian was still keeping Sabbath. But the preachers today, as the prophecy stated, would be liars, and they, in fact, claim that it changed when Jesus arose, but it never did. So, anyway, when they did start keeping Sunday holy because Constantine demanded it, and they had fear in their hearts, thinking, well, if we don't keep it holy, he'll kill us, they became disobedient. And because they became disobedient, they had no clue as to what the prophecies in Revelation meant anymore. And because of that, they saw no danger in making friends with people that were associated with the Church of Rome. or Roman Catholics, as they're called today. And the end result was that of that was they voted in Catholic civil authorities, you know, politicians, if you will, so that within 100 years, or actually within about 50 years, Christians were dying all over the place because the Roman Catholic politicians were killing them off. To the tune of 500 million Christians were killed during the years 538 AD to 1798. It actually started years before that, but it really got off the charts when it hit, when 538 appeared. And then it got bad. And it's all because the Christians were disobedient. They couldn't understand prophecy, saw no dangers in hanging with the Catholics, and then boom, it got out of hand. But anyway, we understand today because in the last days there was going to be a small remnant that do understand the prophecy. So first off, the leopard in the prophecy denotes government. One of the many verses that confirm this is Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 6, which says, "Wherein a lion out of the forest shall slay them, and a wolf of the evening shall spoil them, a leopard shall watch over their cities. Everyone that goeth out thence shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many and their backslidings are increased." And so, this is, I got to tell you, it's just such a beautiful thing to see the Bible define itself, but if the people don't read the Bible, they just don't know it. They just don't realize that those definitions are in there. They really, truly don't. And that's why I did that study about the symbols of Revelation. And then the bear in prophecy denotes a violent government that steals and kidnaps the flock unexpectedly. It says in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 34, "And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock." It also says in Lamentations chapter 3, verse 10, "He was unto me as a bear lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places." As for the violence of this beast, Hosea chapter 13, verse 8 says, "I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps, and will rend the call of their heart, and there will I devour them like a lion. The wild beast shall tear them." So, now, as we know, the lion in prophecy has many definitions. Our favorite being, of course, is Jesus Christ, who, according to Revelation chapter 5, verse 5, is the lion of the tribe of Judah, or the root of David. But because this beast has the leopard and a bear associated with it, we must keep the symbols in context as they are penned in Revelation. And we must also notice that the passage says, like a lion, just as Catholics claim to be Christians. Like Christians. Okay? They try to say that they're Christians, but we know they're not, because their theology is 86.2% pagan. And the only reason I know that calculation, and I kind of like fudged the numbers, in other words, in their favor, because they did use terms like Jesus and the apostles and Mary and stuff like that in some of their doctrines. And they did mention a wooden cross. And so I used to teach Roman Catholicism, and I found that out of their own catechism books that they asked us to teach the children with, it states in there over 86% of it cannot be found in Scripture, but can be found in the Church of Wicca or paganism or Luciferianism, but that's, you got to go into the dungeons to get that stuff, you know, like Satanism, if you will, or Luciferianism, as it's called today, with a more gentler, you know, like the politicians like to use. So anyway, as we see in Isaiah chapter 4, verse 1, they claim Christ Lord, but they don't want to follow him at all. So they're like Christians, or as the prophecy says, like a lion. So they, you know, as the horror, are, you know, they're like a lion. So anyway, so the lion we see here in Revelation 13 is most assuredly speaking of the whore of Rome, or the whore of Babylon, as she is mostly understood by students of prophecy. And Babylon was strong and able to go across the land of old to destroy many nations. That's why Rome was depicted with the iron legs in their day. And Babylon was even used of the Lord to destroy Israel when they rebelled against the law, the Lord. We know what they did, like when Nebuchadnezzar, yeah, that's his name, did what he did in Jeremiah's day. So, does the lion in the vision of John depict such a figure in prophecy? Well, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 30 says, "A lion, which is the strongest among the beasts, and turneth not away for any." So there isn't a beast, even elephants won't scare lions away. I mean, they might, of course, have the gang up on them. They'll walk away, but they'll still keep charging if they're hungry enough. So they won't turn from any. And then Isaiah 38:13 says, "I reckon till morning that as a lion, so will he break all my bones. From day even to the night, wilt thou make an end of me." And then Lamentations says, chapter 3, verse 10 of Lamentations, it says, he was unto me as a bear, lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places. So if we look in the past at the historic facts regarding the Vatican's fierceness against God's people, we see that, yes, they fit the description of a mighty lion who claims to be as Christ or as Christians, or like a lion. It is Satan that moves this evil church. I mean, even 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 says, be sober and vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And that's why we see what we see today. So, question number 5. Let's see if we can do this one now. I never know where the Lord's going to lead with these. I don't know if we'll ever be able to do 6. But let's just see with 5. The question is, from whom did this beast receive his power and his seat and great authority? Well, Revelation 13, verse 2 says, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were that as a bear, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Right? So as is obvious here, the dragon is the one giving the power. But who does he work through on earth to do the prophesied act? Well, I got a little couple of excerpts here from the Vatican archives. The first one is Papal Rights and Privileges on page 13 and 14, and it was written in 1889. And so this is about 40 years, 45 years after the end times began. Okay, and it was written by Francis P.C. Hayes. And he says, when the Roman Empire became Christian and the peace of the church was guaranteed, the emperor left Rome to the Pope to be the seat of authority of the Vicar of Christ, who should reign there independent of all human authority to be to the consummation of ages, to the end of time. And the next one is from the Rise of the Medieval Church, page 168. Alexander Flick wrote this. He had a Ph.D. and all this other stuff, but it says, the removal of the capital of the empire from Rome to Constantinople in 330 A.D. left the Western Church practically free from imperial power to develop its own form of organization. The Bishop of Rome, in the seat of the Caesars, was now the greatest man in the West and was soon forced to become the political as well as spiritual head. And, of course, he's speaking of the Church. And, yes, the popes today do, in fact, claim to be that very same Caesar of old. And I got this quote from Louis Ferraris in his Prompta Bibliotheca Canoniata. Okay, this is just a pile of Latin letters. I'm not going to go through all that, but it's volume 5. And it's under the article Papa, article number 2, and it's titled Concerning the Extent of Papal Dignity, Authority, or Dominion, and Infallibility. And it was published in Paris by J.P. Meing in 1858, and that was like, 14 years after the end time began, and he said that superior papal authority and dominion is derived from the law of the Caesars. Now, here's what the cat gets out of the bag a little bit. Pope Pius IX, in his Discorsi, on page 253, he said, when speaking of himself, he said, the Caesar who now addresses you, to whom alone our obedience and fidelity due. So it is clear that it was the dragon who gave the power here. And at this time, the dragon is working through pagan Rome to do it. But before going further into study, we need to define just who this dragon is. The next question does this. So let's move right into it. We only got like 5 minutes or so, or 7 minutes left. So who is the dragon? Well, Revelation 12, verse 9 actually tells us. I mean, the angel tells John who the dragon is. And it says, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And this is, of course, when Jesus, of course, saw Satan fall as lightning from heaven. And Satan was only cast to this planet. So we're the only ones that have to deal with this, because this planet only holds the ambassadors of Christ that will pass the tests out of all the other planets in the entire universe. And there's trillions and trillions and trillions of them. We already went through all that with those videos and stuff recently. So, with the NASA and the Hubble telescope, where they show the postage stamp section of the universe compared to the actual size of the universe. And there's trillions of galaxies, and in each galaxy are hundreds and hundreds of billions of planets, and which means you can't even count how many people there are. So we see here the dragon is defined as Satan himself. In Revelation 12, you actually find that, yes, it is pagan Rome giving the power unto papal Rome, but as is obvious, paganism is actually a stealthy version of devil worship. And we all know pagan Rome was into Satan. So, yes, history does record that pagan Rome gave its power to papal Rome, but it was only because Satan was their god and they did whatever he asked. Still, does papal Rome have the same satanic fruits of pagan Rome today? Well, we know that paganism is, in fact, a form of devil worship. I mean, that's where the Wiccans come from, the Luciferians, and the actual devil worshippers. They all, with the witchcraft and stuff, they all do the exact same thing. They just come up with these nice, gentle ways of declaring themselves. Like, some call themselves witches, others call them warlock. They even say they got white, blue, red, black, magic, you know. And so it's just all a bunch of falderal, of course. But does Rome at any time admit they are, in fact, pagans at heart? I mean, do they actually make it that easy for us? Well, in 1942, the externals of the Catholic Church, this is the book called The Externals of the Catholic Church, and her government and her ceremonies and her festivals and her sacramentals, and devotions, and it was written by John F. Sullivan, page 156, and it was published by P.J. Kennedy in New York of 1942. And he says, it is interesting to note how often our church has availed herself of practices which were in common use among pagans. Thus, it is true in the certain sense that some Catholic rites and ceremonies are a reproduction of those pagan creeds. And then the story of Catholicism on page 37, it says, it has often been charged that Catholicism is overlaid with many pagan incursions, or incrustations, rather. And Catholicism is ready to accept that accusation and even make it her boast. The great god Pan, you know, Peter Pan? Well, the great god Pan is not really dead. He is baptized. So they just gave it Christian names, is all they ever did. Here's my favorite quote, in fact. And this one is from an essay from The Development of the Christian Doctrine by John Henry, and he did it for Cardinal Newman. That was the name of the book, actually. The subheading was Cardinal Newman. And it was on page 359 that Cardinal Newman actually admits in this book that the use of temples, and these dedicated to particular saints or ornamented on occasions, you know, like Christmas and Easter and stuff, with branches of trees, incense, lamps, and candles, votive offerings on recoveries from illness, holy water, asylums, holy days or holidays and seasons, use of calendars, processions, blessings on the field, sacerdotal vestments, the tonsure, the ring in the marriage, turning to the east, images of it at a later date, perhaps the ecclesiastical chant, and the Kyrie eleison, are all of pagan origin and sanctified by their adoption into the church. Pretty amazing, ain't it? They actually admit it. And you cannot, it's just like with Christian rock today. They seem to think that's Christian music. Well, it's no different from Catholicism. You can't use satanic tools straight from the pits of hell and give it Christian names and think that the Almighty is going to turn his eye or turn his ear from that. I mean, it's just going to upset him. I mean, look what happened in Jeremiah chapter 7 when they started proclaiming there was a queen of heaven. It angered God, it said, because there is no queen of heaven. And this last quote I have is Cardinal Gibbons on page 106. He wrote this in 1917 in his book called Faith of Our Fathers, and he says, the religion, or the penetration of the religion of Babylon, became so general and well known that Rome was called the New Babylon. And this is one of the reasons I believe you see it twice happening, and don't quote me on this, but it's just my own personal opinion that I see where it says Babylon is fallen, is fallen. It's repeated for a reason. So seeing how they openly admit and even boast of being pagan, they go that extra mile and actually embrace Satan for who he is. On my site, I have a page titled Papal Bonesmen, where you'll find that, yes, they do in fact worship Satan in a very graphic manner. The pictures alone that I have on that page should suffice for the most. And still, I do have one page on the site called Vatican.htm that shares an article posted by the Catholic News Service, no less, wherein they are a bit upset at the Pope and his prelates in Rome. And I'm going to read you just an excerpt from that article. Plus, I made a video And on the Papal Bonesman page, some of those pictures you don't want to have with little kids in the room, because you wouldn't believe some of the things the Catholic Church parades in front of the people and declares that they need to worship it. The dead bodies of people. It's just disgusting, these pictures. And there's a church, well, there's actually about five or six churches now. When I made the video, I only knew of that one church, where the interior of the church is literally decorated from the ceiling all the way down to the floors with the bones of the people the Catholic Church killed. I mean, skulls, I mean, even little children. They make chandeliers out of their hip bones and their little baby femurs. And then right on the wall, you see this gigantic symbol of the Jesuit, their logo, the Jesuit logo, made all out of human bones. But anyway, check this out. This is the headline. It says, two eminent churchmen declare Satanism is practiced in the Vatican. And this is what they said in this article. And I did a radio thing on this, too, years ago. But anyway, it says, in recent weeks, a firestorm has been raging in Italy. The controversy revolves around the statements Archbishop Emmanuel Malingo, who made former allegations that satanic activity is taking place inside the Vatican. When questioned by the Italian press about the allegations, he said that he stood by them. The Archbishop chose the Fatima 2000 International Congress on World Peace held in Rome in November of 1996, hosted by the Fatima Crusader magazine, as a platform to first make these allegations public. In conclusion, it appears obvious that Satanism is now and has been existing inside the walls of the Vatican itself. Through the courageous and reputable testimony of Archbishop Malingo and Dr. Malachi Martin, who, by the way, he wrote the book The Keys of This Blood, it says, this deeply buried Vatican secret is surfacing at long last. But the way they have control over the media and the press, it didn't get very far. Most Catholics never even found out about it. So not much else needs to be said at this point, but prophecy said the dragon would be working directly with this church, and the dragon is Satan, and Satanism is obviously Satanism. And so the Vatican is going to do things that are going to please its God. And people say, well, why would Christians want to worship Satan? So they're not Christians. Think about this, and I'll close with this. If you're a Russian soldier in the 1940s and 50s, and even the 60s, and you want to infiltrate American politics, and you want to infiltrate the American military as a spy, are you going to come over here acting like a Russian, talking Russian, and drinking like a Russian? No. You're going to come over here acting like an American to have access to the inner rooms, right? Well, Satan is the one that taught them that, okay? He's the one that gets them to come and act and live a lie so as to infiltrate and attack countries that they don't like. Well, Satan controls the Vatican. And he wants and literally lives to destroy Christianity. That's what he wants to do. And the best way to destroy Christianity is from within. And so he'll act like a Christian. And this is why he appears as an angel of light. I did a video about that a few months ago, where supposedly some Christians were saying an angel of light appeared on stage during some Promise Keepers meeting. An angel of light, don't they read their Bibles? Because the Bible specifically says Satan is an angel of light. But they don't read their Bibles, and they see an angel made out of light, and so, and there's even a photo of it. It looks just like a light refraction, but these people will believe anything. So, bottom line is, prophecy said the dragon will be working directly with this church to the point that he grants them his power firsthand, and now we see that, yes, they are doing exactly as our Lord predicted. That's one of the beauties about Christian prophecy. It's that accurate. I hope and pray you were blessed. I'll be back in a minute.